Good morning. Today is Friday. Good Friday.
Good Friday.
March the 30th. Joining us this morning, Mr. Foster. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So what was... A little bit of private discussion here that everybody can tap into. So what was Holy Week like in New Orleans?
So by way of background, I just got back from 10 days in New Orleans.
Well, we figured that. You know, okay, fine. But I mean, do they, because it's so heavily religious.
You know, the biggest religious event I saw there was the funeral for the owner of the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I had taken a Sunday afternoon, I walked down to Jackson Square, and I said, boy, it's something big going on because they have the big cathedral there on Jackson Square. And I walked over there, and holy cow, that was the biggest religious event I've ever seen, was that funeral.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine.
Well, Tom Benson was his name.
And around for a long time, exactly. Either as a car dealer or as the franchise owner.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Sports. I bet you there were some people in there you might recognize.
I don't doubt it. Yeah, they had a big choir out front. They had a whole street blocked off and just this line of black SUVs. And apparently, I saw it on the news later, they brought him in an antique horse-drawn hearse.
Perfect.
And yeah, yeah.
I mean, so, that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everybody thinks of either Rio or New Orleans for Mardi Gras.
Right.
Okay, but then when you go into Lent.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and it just as strong for Easter, I would
exactly
like to think.
Yeah. And St. Patrick's Day was Saturday, and I didn't see a lot of religious observance occurring.
It's kind of like there's a waiver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
interesting stuff. So, with your travels,
mm-hmm.
What ideas did you come up with?
You know, I ran across a place that that was really neat, and we have an apartment there now because my wife lives there now. And near there is what they call the Warehouse District, which is an old, it's behind the World War II Museum. It's where all the old brick warehouses are. And we stumbled into a place one day trying to look for breakfast, and it was really interesting. What it was is kind of like taking the food truck concept but putting inside a building. And so you had a bar in the middle because everything in New Orleans has a bar.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then probably eight or so different little food vendors set up with their little kitchens. You know, they're all, you know, it was all, obviously they're all leasing it, right? And so you had all these different types of food, and then it's like a food court, like a mall, except it was higher end.
So what was the name of the place, Winston and Emeryville, before they start changing it? Was it the market in Emeryville? Okay, Emeryville. Same concept where it's a static.
Right.
But you wander and you've got like 15 or 20 different operators
right there
and everybody's, you know, leasing, and you have common seating areas.
Right. So it really is, you know, in some ways a mall food court, but these were much
nicer.
Different. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot nicer. Yeah. And I thought that was a great concept. And you know, I immediately sent it pictures to my friends at Humboldt Made and everything like that. And I said, you know, wouldn't it be great to do something like that? And it wasn't that big, quite honestly.
Doesn't need to be because
you're
sharing so much
exactly.
common space.
Yeah, exactly. And it's called the Auction House Market in New Orleans Magazine Street. I think it was Magazine. Well, anyway, so but you know what was what's interesting to me too is see how much is going on down there. You know, they had that little storm called Katrina, and that, you know, had obviously huge negative effects, but it also spurred a lot of redevelopment there, and they've done a really good job, obviously, of preserving the culture and history and the historical architecture that makes that place unique.
It's all survived other
right
events over the years.
Absolutely,
so that stuff's
absolutely
kind of there. It's the press board ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The wafer boards that are falling apart.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and obviously there's a lot of brick buildings and stuff like that, which will do really well on places that, unlike Humboldt County.
But you're using ferns as architectural statements in your gutters and your walls is something that's, you can bring home.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, exactly.
What is the biggest difference between, other than the obvious, the population,
right,
so,
right,
between a New Orleans Baton Rouge area and a Humboldt County? Is it attitudinal? Is it cultural? Is it entrepreneurial? Is it the difference between the states? and the state bureaucracy and costs.
You know, okay, so, you know, I can't quite write the research paper on that yet, but ask me again at the end of the year. But, what you know, the reason my wife moved down there is she's working as part of a team that's putting together the transition plan and managing the transition to a new terminal. So they're building a new, brand new airport, essentially, not the runway and everything, but the new airport terminal. And so there's a tremendous amount of pressure for growth there, and they're accommodating it.
Why the growth?
Well, it's a good question. I think part of it is that people are interested there because there has been a lot of redevelopment and fixing up. Tourism is huge and getting much bigger. You know, they've been looking at the traffic through the airport, and you know, obviously it took a big dip after Katrina, but it's rebounded and increased considerably since then.
You missed the most obvious analogy or pun. In spades, right?
There you go.
I mean, because of, okay.
And that's why they're building a new terminal. And it's going to have 40 gates, which is pretty good size. You know, it was what would be called a medium hub. And what I see there is a lot of the empty lots are being built on. So as I walked down St. Charles or Carondelet Street from where we live down towards the French Quarter, you know, almost every empty lot has got a sign or a fence on it, and they're building in there. And so they really are densifying. Yeah.
So they're infilling, or?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get out to the suburbs much, you know, out in the Kenners, Metairies, and all that around the airport. There's building going on out there, but they are definitely infilling.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. Greg, the concept I think of, and this is really urban renewal.
Right.
Rather than how we define it around here, it would be something I would think that as you look around Humboldt County, that there are opportunities for that, not involving earthquakes or fires.
Right.
Yeah, you look around and you see there are a number of tired buildings, and not everybody's going to be manufacturing marijuana inside the building.
Right,
okay,
right.
Fine. But is there a attitude of the landlords to be willing to embrace some of these new approaches? You know, I'm thinking of 5th and F. You know, I mean, that used to be the prime retail corner, probably north of Santa Rosa.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we've got a parking lot there now. We've got food, you know, the pizza joint, and two empties.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so, okay, now retail hasn't changed that much, but landlords have changed.
And I think we get this. What I saw in New Orleans was a lot of, especially in the warehouse district, was a lot of adaptive reuse. So you saw, you know, small retail downstairs, maybe service retail with housing upstairs. And so, in fact, our apartment's in an old hotel. It's a 14-story building, and they condoed it out. Downstairs is a childcare place, a pizza joint bar, and a cell phone store, you know. And so,
well, kind of like the old artist live workspace that we had in Old Town for about 10 years.
Yeah,
that was the big push, and then it kind of fizzled out.
In the old model used to be, you know, you'd have a little retail downstairs, at least in Eureka, I think, and then offices upstairs. And, you know, I'm doing what used to take me an office, I can do on my phone now, right? Walking down the street. I mean, I've signed loan documents on my phone. And so the demand for office space, being a one-to-one kind of thing, unless you just have a lot of new companies moving in.
It's changed.
Yeah. And so the city, what I saw there, and it's not just New Orleans, it's when you go to any sort of dense urban environment, is that, reusing these buildings, being creative about getting about housing down there. And I think that's what getting housing mixed into your urban core really solve, I think, a lot of issues. One of which is, of course, that you get cash flow to the buildings again. It helps the retail down there because people who are down there will run to the little market, or they'll go get a drink or eat at a restaurant, or do all those little things.
Just people there.
Right. And and the other thing is you have people there. And when places get abandoned, you don't have, as Jane Jacobs would say, the eyes on the street, which were the windows, right? The lit windows looking out in the street. It discourage certain types of activities.
Yeah, bad things happen.
Negative, exactly. Yeah. And so, we would see people out all, of course, it's New Orleans, so people are out all hours of the night, and we wouldn't necessarily
all
see that here.
All levels of functionality.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Some stumbling home, some going to work. It was really, we did some condo shopping, my wife did, while she was down there, and how many places now have condos now for rent, and they're new, right? And again, they were old warehouses, old retail shops, maybe even little old hotels, and people are moving in there, young folks primarily, young urban, the old young urban professional kind.
That's right. An old term. Say the word.
Yuppies. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
But not just that. It's interesting because there was one of the hotels on Lee Circle. So we're right off Lee Circle, and it's been repurposed into a elderly care home, kind of, it's a senior housing. It's not like a hospital there is, a SNF unit or anything like that. It's people are coming and going, but they're there for the older folks, and it's a retirement home. And
or mature living area, right?
Yeah, that's
medical thing,
right? Exactly. And so they're being really smart around that, and the city's playing a role. They're doing a lot of redevelopment, I don't think, as I look here, I don't see the cities or the county mandating you have to do certain things, in terms of redeveloping your property. But I think we do play a role in saying, you know what, we really want to encourage something new on this property, and then look for the ways to do that that benefits both the landowner and the community, and take a proactive approach.
Can that be done without the facade grants and some of the redevelopment structure that California had before? Because I know that's kind of the whipping boy right now.
Right. And so there's some programs being put back in place that sort of redevelopment light that have happened and are coming. But I think it's also, as the city of Eureka has been finding, that part of it is just getting the policy right. And so, the old zoning code, which was put in place in the 60s, really said, by text, you can't do the things we said we want everybody to do, right? And so they're fixing that, which is good. But even rezonings, I look at some of these vacant big retail sites or places that are zoned general commercial. I mean, even coming down Myrtle Avenue, I come off Hubbard and come down Myrtle Avenue here, and I see a lot of properties, Lucas kind of area there, and I see that they're empty, and then I look to zoning and they're general commercial or they're retail, and I think to myself, it probably really won't revert to that, right? And so, could we take a proactive approach to say to that landowner, we're going to rezone you to multifamily, we're going to find some ways to help you. And because the other issue we have here is a really low unemployment rate, everyone's screaming for employees, and then on the other hand, every day I get people saying I can't find housing.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Executive Director of REDEC and sponsor of this show, Greg Foster. American Ag also is with him. Cheese and CDH Painting.
Boy, I know all those folks.
Yeah. Well, and you know me too, so it's kind of like...
I know, but I don't go around broadcasting.
Wouldn't advertise that one too hard. But you did forget to bring the food. You know, all this talk about New Orleans food.
Boy, I tell you. Yeah.
Oh, I see. You did bring it with you.
Yeah, I brought it with me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got it with me. It's under my coat over here.
Greg, the concept of having motivated landlords, and I don't want to just bang on them, but it certainly seems like that's where a lot of the challenge for business owners in our area lie.
Right. Right.
Now, some of it's with the tenants, too. I get it. You know, we've got a bunch of screwy people around who have no problems in not paying attention to landlords' property.
Right. I get that.
But
that's a universal truth.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
But when you go to other communities that are, you have a sense of activity, a sense of vibrancy, it's not around the pot industry.
Right.
It's not waiting for Godot. These folks are doing things differently. And even if the market isn't growing, their share of the market is.
Right, because
of what they're doing. They're attracting business. They're maintaining and growing and doing the new stuff and welcoming people instead of sitting there with empty buildings wondering, woe is me.
Right.
You know, and I still question the 4% unemployment because I know the definition has changed.
Right, yeah, okay, it's fine. A tough one.
But let's say it's a tight labor market.
And I believe that is true.
I think that's the case.
Yeah.
We should have people clamoring to open up storefronts, open up businesses. The entrepreneurial spirit is, and yet you drive through Old Town Eureka, there's slots almost on every block. You drive downtown Eureka, there's slots on almost every block.
Right.
Fortuna's doing a little bit better job. McKinleyville's doing a little better job. Arcata's doing a little bit better job. But there's, if you wanted to locate and pick a town, there's choices.
Right.
That doesn't seem like economic robust is transferring into some of these opportunities.
Right. And I think you're right. And I think, just in general, I would say there's sort of three types of big property owners or building owners, let's say. You know, there's the entrepreneur. That's the person who's like, I take pride in being the flagship building that's active in town. I not only do that as a point of a way to make money, but I do that as a point of personal pride. And how many buildings back in the day used the owner or the building of a builder would put their name on it? This is the blank building. This is the blank building.
Or live in it themselves.
Right, exactly. And then you have those that say, you know, I've got this building and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to maintain it well, you know, that. And then you have the others that say, you know, I may have inherited it or I've owned it for a long time. And my job really is to not worry about it, and I'm just going to take that rent check every year. And I have almost no property tax. My cost basis is very low, and I'm just going to use it, and I'm going to go off and do something else. And
almost like an absentee.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
If they're local.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you start and those types of building owners obviously exist everywhere, and I think it's when you have a mix that starts to bend towards the third type that's too far that you begin to see the declines of downtowns. And the other thing that happens, of course, is when you start seeing the declines of the downtowns, you don't get that first type of person because they're not willing necessarily to take all of that risk and be the only one out there doing it. So, you know, we've had, you know, a project that I've seen that's been really kind of cool is the old Greyhound Hotel. You know, there was a lot of investment put into that.
And for those unfamiliar, you may as well give the location.
It's on 3rd Street. And, you know, all those little storefronts there and the Greyhound Hotel, which was really old and burned out, 3rd and between E and F, you know, next to 10 William, between, you know, past 10 William, Wendell Williams and up. And, you know, Jack Freeman down there, who's an architect, you know, he took, and I worked with him on that project, and, you know, he took great pride and said, I'm going to do a really good job on this, and I want this to be high-end apartments, and that's where the 3rd Street Gallery is now, the Humboldt State thing, and he did a great job on that. And, you know, that was basically, you know, just when he got it, you know, he bought it as a rundown mess, and he's, you know, worked his tail off and to make that into
so
a nice property.
So what separates him from the guys that have buildings that they don't care if it's owned across the street?
What you just said, care. You got to care, right? And it may be that, you know, I don't care. My building looks okay. I may get enough to support my lifestyle, and I don't care. The building itself is just a way to get a check every month as a point of personal pride. Or, you know, you maybe you're towards the end of your working life and you're just like, I don't want to invest a lot and do a lot to you know, try to build this thing up because the return is going to occur after I'm no longer need it. But I think that's part of it. You know, buildings are businesses, you know, in some ways, and, you know.
Well, there should be profit centers.
Absolutely. And so to have that real entrepreneurial vision and the drive to do something creative is what differentiates that one property from another right down there. And some just have huge financial barriers to overcome because they're so old. And
at least that one's understandable, and
right,
you can be sympathetic to that.
Right. But I think there's an opportunity there where we can say, rather than just shrug our shoulders and say, oh, that's too bad, to really start coming together and saying, you know, what can we do to support this person or this group or whatever to get this thing done? The other thing I think we need to do, and this is probably the small government types don't like this, make it painful for them not to do something. And the way you make it painful is by, making it more expensive to let the place run down than to work on it.
You're right. Yeah. Let's prefer the incentivize, and we'll talk about that when
we
come
back.
Yeah, there you go. It's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, I guess with the various owners that you were describing of properties, you know, if you're out of the area, okay, I mean, we've heard about absentee landlord, whether it's in residential or whether it's commercial properties.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's tough to be as passionate for a town that isn't your town.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the guys and the gals, though, that are locals. They drive by the building every day.
Yeah.
They know what it is. Or worse yet, they grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel no obligation to the community and to themselves. I mean, if one did it, you know it's dominoes.
Right.
And
right.
They're all of a sudden we're going to start to see a whole bunch of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it too much risk or is it just lethargy?
Yes. I think there's a perceived risk. And, you know, we don't have that big strong economy like we used to have. Part of it's just age too, you know. A lot of these houses, and there was a fascinating presentation I saw on the age of housing in Eureka and how much was built before 1939 and how much was built. And so, you know, there is substantial investment, I think, that needs to be made in some of these properties just because they've gotten so old. But on the other hand, you know, if And I hear from employers everywhere. I mean, I had a discussion yesterday with one of the largest employers in the county, and they're talking about how their people just cannot find housing. And so, If you're just really only concerned about getting as much rent you can and spending as little money as you can, then you know you're probably in a good market right now. And you know, personal pride or whatever, be darned. It's unfortunate.
But if somebody stepped out and did something that would be considered nice, not mm-hmm. extraordinary, not extravagant, but mm-hmm. nice. I would think that they'd be filled so fast that the others would be looking around going, what just happened here? And they're getting 25% above what they're getting.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, here we go. And we yeah. start to see and feel and sense the change.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what you're going to, I mean, to get to that point, you got to actually want more than and not just be comfortable with what you got. Right. And some people do want that. You know, they want to maximize. They take a personal pride in saying, I own this and I maintain it and I feel pride about it.
Or if you're the linchpin and you're a reason why the local economy isn't doing better.
Right.
That's an attitudinal shift.
But, you know, the word you used earlier was care. You got to yeah. care. And if you don't care, then, you know, there's really nothing you can do. I mean, everything needs to be sort of a carrot and stick kind of situation.
Well, hooray for the carrots.
Yeah.
I knew you'd bring it around to Easter.
Yeah, there you go. Carrots and eggs. Carrots and eggs.
See everybody on
Chocolate
Monday.
Chocolate bunnies.